Miss Henrietta Leon. My father's name was Louis Leon. My mother's name, Agnes Powers. As I reminisce about old times, I'd like to tell you how hard it was to keep clean then. We had no running water, as the well we had on the farrow lot went dry. We had to buy water in a barrel for 25 cents. Some men made a living doing that. Rainwater was carefully stored away for washing purposes. No daily baths in unless something special happened. My mother, who was a very neat woman, on Saturdays, she'd bring the water in and put the water to heat. She got a tub which she kept for the purpose, for bathing purposes. She put that on the kitchen floor in front of the stove. It was warm there. We had no heat in the rest of the house like we have now. Each in turn, we were put into the tub after the change of water had been made. And we were washed and scrubbed and shampooed till we were nice and clean and shiny. Till the next week. In the latter part of the 19th century, we were informed that we were to have electricity. What a joy that was when finally it came. No more smelly kerosene, no smoke lamp chimneys to wash. What a pleasure to push a button and everything was lighted up and the streets were no dark places to be frightened as we went by and think of all the electrical conveniences and many that other commodities, too many to enumerate. My father was a very capable man, but he was foreman at different mills till he retired. My mother was a quiet person, always ready to help when someone needed her. Once, when a lady brought in her son, yelling about how he had a black eye that Edward had given him, she wanted my mother to punish him without hearing the other side of the story. She did not want to listen to reason, so my mother just closed the door and walked away. Let me tell you about my first automobile ride. 2 years I took by myself. I had just been learning to ride to Champlain School when I was teaching. When I got to school, the boys had been playing ball. When they saw me coming, they dropped everything, ball, bat, and mask. I passed over the whole thing, leaving everything flat. Were the boys mad at me? But I made it right by them. Another time, as I was going along, I somehow slipped into the ditch on the side of the road. My mother, who was a lover of trees and flowers, got off and pulled up a small tamarack. Which she placed in the garden, and it was still there when we sold the house. My grandmother Dion came to live with us, with my father and mother, when my grandfather died accidentally. And she had 4 little girls with her, and she had a huge family of 18 children, but some died in infancy. She was a very capable lady. She was always ready to assist the doctor at the time of birth. She even assisted when one of the towns, Alma's family, was born. My mother would go if needed, but one midwife in the family seemed to be enough. My grandmother came from Via Zulu. She brought with her a large black iron kettle, which we still have. This we used, and even today we cook the proverbial pot pie in it. Not the chicken pie there in anymore. It is bigger than that, with two chickens and some pork chops and potatoes and onions and other seasoning. This we have after church service, Christmas Eve, a very substantial meal. We had it for five generations now. This year the crowd was so big, 25 in all, that Hub, Pat's wife, made a second one so that everyone could have a helping. Last summer, Jared Gagnon, a nephew, and his wife, Hazel, went to visit his brother, Kenneth, in Washington, D.C. Hazel made a pot pie and gave them the recipe. And Ken wrote, and he said that they too, after midnight mass, had a pot pie out there in Washington. He says that following the young tradition. After the Réveillon is over, everyone goes in front of the fireplace and sings Christmas carols. After that, Martine, who is the hostess, plays Santa, and everyone is generously remembered with piled up gifts and so many Christmas gifts. In the afternoon, we all are invited to a buffet supper to Ernest Marty's house. His wife, Tina, who is Martin's sister, serves us a delightful, tasty meal. She certainly is a capable cook with everything served to perfection. My older sister, Rose Peltsy, was married in 1911 in the month of January. Before the wedding, she had a kitchen shower with everything that you can imagine that they gave her. And then they had another big shower with big gifts that Alan Hammond gave her, a living room set. My father and mother gave her a bedroom set and everything that they needed for house keeping was there. The dishes that were wonderful, all ivory and cut glass that came from the Watson store. They had a beautiful store, there were all kinds of nice things. And her wedding outfit, her dress, and her going away outfit was made by her sister-in-law, Miss Evelina Pepsi. It was a long dress, as the dresses were long at that time. They looked very nice though. She had a white dress with veil and a blue suit with a lace blouse, and everything was just so very beautiful. And then I always liked hats, so I had a new hat that came from Miss Julia Ferrer, who was the head of the millinery store, and she was also the telephone operator at that time. So that everybody went to church, and my father had got a two-seated pung from Joe Parent, who had a livery stable, and we all got in there, and there was quite a bit of snow, but we all got in there, and she had a beautiful Wendy and Edward and I singing. And after that, we had the reception at the house where the family and a few friends came. And for their honeymoon, they went to Augusta. John Peltier, her husband, was a representative at the legislature. So they went there and passed the winter months. When they came back and started housekeeping, when my sister Rose started to make her first breakfast, she found out the only thing missing was a tea kettle. So they boiled some water in the dish, but in the afternoon they were chopping and bought themselves a tea kettle. The rest was all there. In the summer, we children would all get up in the morning and my mother would pack a lunch and we'd go picking berries on the Poplar Street, which piece of land belonged to the Farrells. And we'd pick the strawberries and raspberries and we'd stay there all day and come back with our pails of berries and my mother would she'd make jam and preserves and different things with them and some delicious pies too. And then when the blueberries were ready, why, that was a bog where Allendale, where the Allendale Chanting School now stands. And we'd go there and pick blueberries and come back with that. That too was a can for the winter. And we also had a garden, and in the garden we had vegetables of all kinds, turnips and carrots and onions. And they'd, when they were ready, they'd freeze them and all put them in the cellar for the winter. And we also had a cow, a pig, and some chickens, and sometimes a turkey or two. And in the fall, when it was freezing time, they'd kill the chickens and freeze them. And when they were well frozen, it was iced. They'd pack them in a barrel with some snow so that they stayed like that. And they also did that with the meat. Although some of them, the fat pork was put in brine and kept there for cooking purposes during the winter months. So that we didn't have all the necessities that we have now. We had to see to our own. And the cow, of course, finished the milk and the butter and the cream that was needed. And when she got too old, well, they sold her and got another one. So we were always well supplied with the milk.
Who made the butter?
And my mother and sometimes my grandmother would also make the butter. They'd make the butter so that we had that. It was a nice fresh butter all the time. And the pig would punish us with some lard. They'd melt that when it was too fat and get some of the shortening out that we'd use for different cooking purposes during the winter.
How about soap?
Oh, they'd also make some soap. When they had, always saved all kinds of grease, and nothing was thrown away. And then when there was enough, why, they'd have some lye and make the soap. It was very strong soap, very hard on the hands, but it's a very good cleaning soap that they use for maybe make soft soap to put in the washer to wash. But at that time there was no electric washers. They had to rub tum-tum on the board, on the board that they had placed in there. So they had to have some hard work to do there.
About the trees in the garden.
And my mother was as I said before, a lover of trees. So she had apple trees and plum trees, and she had a tamarack tree, and she even had a butternut tree that she grew from a seed. And the butternut tree is still outside in the yard, back of the yard. It's an immense tree, and she had planted that. Every time she had a seed, an apple seed, an orange seed, or anything that she ate, she'd stick that in the flower pot and grow different things. And when they were big enough, she put them in the garden. We had a few strawberries and some raspberries in the garden. And she was always willing to do things with that so that we could have something special to eat. I graduated from Sacred Heart School in 1906, and I taught school for 42 years. And in the fall, I started teaching in the Violet Settlement, replacing one of the teachers that would not stay any longer. And they just had school in the summer then and in the autumn. And after that, I was out to teaching there for that year, I went to teach at Kicking School. They had built a new school there. And I stayed there the rest of the year. They built the school there because they had built a nice big mill, St. John Lumber Company, and that brought in quite a number of families. So they needed a school to take care of the school children. And I stayed all the next year too there in Kenya. I went back again. And then I came back and I taught the Sacred Heart School till the school burned in 1924. And we went to Champlain School. They had just one session there, and St. John's School too, so that the children wouldn't lose all their time. And I went there to Champlain School to teach the rest of the year. We finished the year, that was in February, and all the next year we went again, and then the school was finished. And I went to Sacred Heart School, and I taught there till I was all retired. And let me tell you that the only salary I got when I began was $21 a month. So imagine what that is now. My mother had two brothers that went to the Civil War, and one of them came back. He wasn't feeling so very well, and he didn't last very long. He passed away not long after. That was my Uncle Dennis. And my Uncle Patrick had promised my mother a pair of red shoes, and he brought them. And was she pleased about that? Even when we wore big shoes to tell us about the red shoes, she was so delighted.
Wasn't she the youngest of the family?
She was the youngest of a family of 12. So she was the favorite of the family, and they kind of favored her. So then, but I had two brothers too that went through the World War, the First World War. And Roy went to Germany and stayed there right through the war, and even stayed 6 months later as an interpreter, as he knew how to speak English and French. But Wilfred didn't have no chance to go any place because the war ceased before. He just had basic training at the U of M. And after that was finished, he stayed there and he took a course at Beale College. And he went away to New York, and he's still there. He always stayed there. But Roy has passed away in 1968. Now, my mother was one of the few people that knew how to read at that time. And we were lucky enough to have a mother that would know how to read and write. And the ladies around would gather up, my godmother amongst them, my Aunt Jane. And they'd come at night and she'd read them stories from Mary J. Hall books and Algiers and different authors. She'd read them a few chapters and they'd help her with her knitting if need be for her to read a little bit longer because they were so interested in the stories. And she did that and they enjoyed it and so did she.
Now talk about the, did you have any sheep on the year?
Oh, I was going to say that. We were very well fed and taken care of. My mother used to, and my grandmother used to knit all the stockings and socks and mittens and caps and scarves that were needed from yarn that they carded, and they had spinning wheel and they'd spin the yarn to make those things. So that it was nice and warm in the summer, in the winter, and in the summer we had some nice little cotton dresses that were always nicely ironed and starched.
Your grandmother, how did she knit to save oil and in the wintertime?
My grandmother, she'd sit in front of the stove. There was an opening in the kitchen stove. And she'd sit in front of that and would either knit or sew to save the kerosene. She thought she could see enough by that light to do that. So it did preserve the lights from being lighted on.
How about the cars at that time?
Well, the first car I owned was a Ford. It was a nice Ford. It had the glass all around it, which was one of the first Fords that had, they didn't have to get off and put up all the tops on. It was just had to roll on the windows, but I was pretty brave at that time. I didn't know enough to be afraid of driving, so after a while, just 2 weeks I had a car. I went with my mother to Caribou to visit my Aunt Mary Ann, that was my mother's sister, and when we got to Parent Hill, the car stalled, so of course I didn't know what was the trouble. But there's one man that came there. He says, you know, you haven't got enough gas. At that time, they had to have no less than half a tank of gas so that the gas would reach the engine. So he turned the car around and climbed up the hill. Everybody had got off. And then we all got in into him and went to Caribou.
How did he go up the hill?
He went up backwards. He went up the hill backwards after that was up. We got on again, continued our trip to Caribou, but we didn't have to climb no hill coming back, which went down, so it made it easier. I found out later that all cars had to go up backwards because the cars were not as powerful as they are now. In the one-man schoolhouse, the sisters came in 1891, and they had quite a number of teachers, so we had each our own grade. And my aunt was, who had come to live with us when she was a little girl, graduated the first one there, Annie Liam.
In what year?
In 1899, she was the first one after the high school had been accredited to give diplomas. And she was a very intelligent person. she taught in the training school in Fort Kent. And she came back from there, and she was super good in Van Buren. She taught in the schools in Van Buren. And she got married to a friend who was a surveyor, but later on became a custom officer and was transferred to Bangor. So when she was in Bangor, she taught in the Bangor High School. And she just had a diploma from here, but no college degrees. But she got along very nicely with all of that. So I started to teach. I went to Gaston Normal School. Now everything is all changed. We have nice schools. We have a beautiful school, high school for the boys and girls, a junior high school, Champlain School, Trinity School, St. John's School, Kindle School. The three last ones that are teaching a forward school, which is on individualized teaching.